Welcome to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders who impact our community. Now, the recipient of three First Place Virginia Association of Broadcasters Awards and the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
This morning, our focus is Empower House. Kathy Anderson, the executive director of Empower House, is here. Kathy, good morning. Good to have you back this morning.
Good morning, Ted. Good to have you back.
Well, thank you. When we last spoke, couple of things. You were talking about, you were making plans to move to a new location, and you're now off of Lafayette Boulevard.
Absolutely. Yeah, that plan to move our office location, that's our public outreach facilities, it's where the hub of our services, it was that move that prompted another activity that we're going to talk about. But yes, we achieved the move. We did that in late April. It's at 150 Old Greenwich, Suite 150, and that's in Spotsylvania, Fredericksburg 22408.
And you made that move because of the road, Route 1 and in Harrison Road there. That intersection is going to totally change. And unfortunately, where your offices are will be like a turn lane.
I know. The whole building's coming down. It had a good run, that building. It was the Mormon Church, and then it was the old Virginia Heartland Bank building.
Yeah.
And sadly, it was becoming known as, that's where Empower House is. So,
it was a great location for visibility. And actually when you think about it, at the time when you made the change, I mean, I remember when you made the change and put the Empower House sign up there sitting there to go across one day, and it really was a good It was good for visibility.
You know, visibility, we couldn't have had it better at that intersection. People sit and wait and we had changed our name shortly thereafter and our logo was different. So I can remember wearing our T-shirt and somebody saying, hey, wait a minute, I recognize that. Where do I recognize that from? And she had to think about it. And finally she said, you're at that intersection that I have to sit at. My husband and I drive there every day.
Yeah.
Yep, that's us. So, the visibility and as far as people knowing that we exist, it was tremendous.
So, but anyway, at the time that was good. But I guess where you're at, it was a little tough to get in where you were at. You had to, with the way the roads were configured. But you're now at Old Greenwich and have been there now for a little bit. Have you gotten used to where everyone's office is and where everything's at?
Yeah, the configuration is really different in our new offices. So, it kind of goes back and it goes back and it goes back. So the building we left with was 5,000 square feet and, and it was laid out a certain way and it was fine and it was great. And this one is the same way. It's laid out different. We're all used to it now.
Yeah.
It's great. It's got good parking. The access is good. And, people are finding us. So it's just a matter of getting the word out. So thanks for helping us to do that.
So, again, the move for Empower House is taking place. And you can find out more about anything we're talking about this morning. They've on the website, empowerhouseva.org, empowerhouseva.org. The second item that you have been talking about for quite a while, the 24-hour new domestic shelter, that is moving forward quickly.
It's moving forward quickly, right? You and I have talked about it sort of privately for a while, and we talked about when could we talk about it publicly. So we're doing that today, and we were working on it long before it was something that you and I had talked about, as you can imagine. But so long ago that I want to say it was 2008, maybe even 2007, that we sort of put it on paper saying that really we needed to do something to expand our shelter. And there were a variety of reasons.
And you have a shelter, and you've had a shelter for years.
We've had a shelter since the organization, practically since the organization opened, and that was in 1978. I don't know if it was 79 or 80 that they rented that first building. That first building was on Lafayette Boulevard that since then has been knocked down. If I keep talking about our buildings, there's going to be a series of we've been in the building, it'll get knocked down.
That happens.
But anyway, so the founders decided to build from the ground up in 1988 our domestic violence shelter. It wasn't just our shelter, but it was also the hub of services. And at that time, you know, the size of the organization, it worked. It's about a 2,900 square foot split foyer house, and there were offices and room for folks to spend the night. And it was a nice, nice way to sort of support people and get the work done. In 96, the organization realized not only had the organization grown out of that space in terms of people staying there, but also really being able to meet up with people. So, you know, at that time, if you wanted to meet with somebody in the community so that they didn't come to the secret location, you had to go to the Popeyes or the McDonald's or the Hardee's. Mm. I mean, we had to like go mobile to meet with folks, and it wasn't private. It wasn't confidential. So in 96, our first public outreach location was at 1703 William Street. And that is has been knocked down. It's where Center Court offices are.
Oh yeah,
there was a Cape Cod house there, and that's where the office was. And that was the beginning of people seeing our sign and saying, "Oh, you know, I saw your sign." And so people knew that there were domestic violence services. Otherwise, they knew by the phone book or they knew by the police. You know, what limited advertising or flyers or, you know, things like that.
And that does create that's interesting that does create some issues for you, because you do want to get your word out. You want to know, want people to know what you're doing, but there's got to be so much privacy to this and just a safety kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, our public outreach location, people come to, we go out and provide services from that location. And, you know, relatively speaking, it's, you know, when I say relative, I mean, it's actually, excuse me, it's worked really well. Having a public location means the police come there, the sheriff's mm-hmm. office comes there. We, you know, have people who need a variety of services. They don't all need shelter services. So we kept our shelter confidential. And, you know, that means not publicizing the location, things like that. You know, things have changed, and there's having public signage, having a public location is in some ways less significant because of the internet, and there's so many more ways for people to know about us. But it is convenient as far as meeting people who don't use shelter services. Our shelter services are about 300 people in a year, about half children and adults. But our overall services is closer to anywhere from 2,400 to 2,800 people in a year that we're helping. And so you can see by the numbers how important it is to be able to have a public location where people can come to, and also for us to be mobile out in the community, providing support groups, providing court advocacy, things like that. But as far as the shelter goes, you know, we knew in 1996, when we converted the two bedrooms or the two offices to bedrooms, mm-hmm. that was expanding our shelter at that time.
I've told you this before, that the two things that really caught my attention, because you and I have been having these discussions for 10 years or so of coming in and you talking about it and publicizing the needs. But the first time I noticed on the website when it talked about you can escape now and not be traced. But then a couple of years ago, I came over to your location to drop off a CD of a show we had done, and just all the security I had to go through and that made it really real to me that this is what people have to deal with, and you have to be, you can't be too careful.
I know. We put measures in place, you know, for everyone's protection, and what may be surprising to folks is most of the time there's no sort of incident whatsoever, and really we haven't had an incident. And you know, good news, bad news, you know, folks who at home are dangerous to a girlfriend, a spouse, you know, their intimate partner. They're typically in every public sphere. That is not an issue. That's not an issue in terms of they don't walk around beating people up. They don't walk around as a danger to everyone else. And we have folks come to our facility. We have a program for court ordered participants. So folks who have been charged criminally for domestic violence come to our office. They are signing up for the program that the courts order them into. And, you know, we've not had a problem. Folks are polite. They're, you know, they're perfectly, you know, well behaved. There are a few who, you know, like, I suppose, in any situation, you know, there's a few people who truly are dangerous to everyone.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's when the security helps.
Well, and then you've talked before about the situations of where women who are caught in these situations will say, mm-hmm. no one would ever imagine that, you know, my husband, my partner is, that these kind of things are happening because in the community, he's, you know, the life of the party.
Right. So the profile is someone who, you know, doesn't put on a public face of danger. And really, I think the misunderstanding by most people is that someone who uses domestic violence is they just lose control and they just, you know, they can't help themselves. They get so angry and then they lose it. And when in fact, it's not someone getting angry and losing it. It's someone who has a lot of control and they decide when they want to use their intimidation, their threats, and their violence, because that allows them to control their partner. Studies show that if you monitor someone's physiological signs, that they're actually calmer at a point of using their intimidation and violence against their partner than the average sort of physiological signs for that person. And so what's happening there is that out in public spheres, they can easily control it. It's not an anger problem. They don't have an anger problem. They have a problem. It's a behavior problem, and it's something they use against their partner.
Yep, control. Kathy Anderson, the executive director of Empower House here. EmpowerHouseVA.org is the website where you can find out all kinds of information. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about this 24-hour new domestic shelter, because Empower House is getting very close to being able to open it and looking for some more funds to do that. But they are starting to wind down and getting close to the end. And we will talk about that when we come back on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook. Just search News Talk 1230 WFVA. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson with Empower House is here. Empower House, the former Rappahannock Council Against Domestic Violence. I'm always surprised because Empower House just rolls off the tongue now, but you have said, and I know I have heard others in the community, and you still in a lot of your brochures will say formally that it still hasn't caught on with a lot of people.
Right. We worry that people think it's a fly-by-night organization because it's a name that hasn't been around in the community. It started in 2012. Now, the organization itself that used to be called Rappahannock Council on Domestic Violence, often referred to as RCDV, you know, we've been around since 1978. So to us, it's one seamless, you know, not an issue organization. But for many hearing Empower House, they're kind of like, who is this?
Yeah.
What do they do? You know, and that's a risk. But the risk was worth everything that the new name brought. You know, so more people are interested in participating as someone who seeks a service, but also people want to volunteer and support the organization so many ways because, you know, they notice it. They notice the name. They notice the look. The look as designed by Byron Glazer, who, you know, dedicates and volunteers all this time to create those materials. He provides all of his design work for free, so we're so in such a good place with that.
Wow. Now, in your design work, we were talking off air before we went on the air about how it really it's not mm-hmm. a lot of words, it's a lot of pictures, some fast statistics, and it gets your attention, and you see right away the scope of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, he and his design partner, Sandra Higashi, they are brilliant. They use color, images. You know, I talked about kind of minimizing text because they just have an eye that whatever it is we're trying to convey mm-hmm. in a poster, in a postcard, in anything, you know, this brochure that talks about the shelter, it's all visually appealing, you know, with certainly with people, just creative ways of using our logo type. So they, you know, they really bring the organization to life through design.
Yeah, no, it definitely, just like you say, with the colors and the pictures and everything. When you talk about people getting involved and wanting to get involved, we've really seen that in the last couple of years. The Community Give has been a big help to a lot of nonprofits in the area, especially, though, in Powerhouse. And that's what's gotten you closer to opening this this new shelter.
Yeah, you know, all those things combined. So the Community Give was fantastic. The Community Foundation offering that to all the nonprofits in the community. And then, you know, backing that up with tons of training. They had monthly training both times of the Community Give. It's only happened 2 years in a row. We, you know, realized that as a fundraising initiative, at much like a fundraising event, that was an opportunity to get the word out and to really focus. And it really resonated with our donors, with new donors, and, you know, being in the middle of raising funds for our new shelter building, since we, you know, sort of signed on the papers about just over a year ago. But of course, we've been working on it for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Community Give helped us this year sort of launch it publicly. So, you know, sort of working around the fact that the Community Give was happening and where we were in the campaign, you know, we were able to put together that story and tell the community what we were doing through a time when a lot of people were paying attention to nonprofits because it was Community Give Day.
Yeah, no, in this year especially, you focused on the needs for this. Mm-hmm. And it just occurs to me, without the Community Give and what you got, instead of us talking about opening this right around the corner, we would probably, you'd be still in the throes of, you know, we're a year or so away.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, because early on in identifying the need, you know, that had been going on for years, and figuring out exactly how we would expand shelter. We knew there was the need, and the need was a couple different places. It was super crowded, 20 women and children, 2.5 bathrooms in a home with 5 bedrooms. I mean, it just crowded. Not lots of privacy or living space, huddled into one standard size kitchen. So, you know, the need was obvious, and we were also, our turnaway rate was increasing. So early on, Doris Buffett saw, you know, the need. She had toured the shelter back in 2011, and we had showed her the different possibilities for expanding. You know, would we build on? Would we buy property and build from the ground up? Would we buy an existing building? And we kind of had, you know, we had spec'd out everything that we thought the shelter needed to do in either that renovation or that, you know, that build. So when she signed on, we also kind of delayed it. We didn't think we were ready to raise the money. We were sort of testing ourselves. Can we raise the money? That Community Give last year was a indication, you know, a positive indication. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, we identified the building. Because we were moving our offices, we stumbled upon the building we now purchased, and the reason we stumbled upon it is we were looking for new office space. But when that building had everything we had needed, the 10,000 square feet, the tons of bathrooms, you know, we were like, oh, this can be our right here is our shelter. And what will it take to convert it? What will the price tag be, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, after that, there were board members. Every board member has contributed, a couple of them in very major ways. We had an event where, you know, donors got closer to our mission. We had folks speak about their story. We had more people signing on. The Community Give gave us very high profile. People understood that there was an organization meeting a real community mm-hmm. need, and that was beautiful with the Community Give. And then from then on, with the materials and everything else, we've been able to talk to people individually, tell our story, or talk in, you know, in small groups, and people have seen, they've toured the shelter, the old shelter, the new shelter, and they see what the impact will be in terms of at full build out, doubling our occupancy and all of the things that can happen in the new building.
I was just going to ask you before we're getting ready to take a break here, but that you've got 20 women in the current shelter. Yeah. So what that'll go up to 40.
Yeah. So it's really 20 women and children. It's about 10 women and 10 children.
Okay.
So 20 people. So at full capacity, you know, when the building is ready and when we have the staffing, you know, it will double. In the short term, you know, we'll bring it up some because we can impact the numbers that we're turning away now. As time goes on and as we have more staff people, then we will allow it, you know, to go up to 30. And then at some point in the future, over, you know, a certain number of years and as the need demonstrates, then we have that to go up from there.
We are talking with Kathy Anderson, Executive Director of Empower House, empowerhouseva.org. We're focusing this morning about the new domestic shelter. We'll get into again some more of the specifics of the shelter and how we can all get involved. More in Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:30.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Voice it now on Facebook. Search News Talk 1230 WFVA and place your comments now. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're talking about Empower House this morning. EmpowerHouseVA.org is their website. Kathy Anderson, the executive director, here along with Jen Galatro. She is on the board of directors. We're mainly focusing this morning on this new domestic shelter. And Kathy, talk to us what makes this shelter different and why it's really needed.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier that we converted two offices into bedrooms. And so the shelter we're operating now, it was never really intended to have 20 women and children, you know, there for their 2-month stay. You know, it was, it's a standard size kitchen. It's 2.5 bathrooms. It's 5 bedrooms with bunk beds in each of the bedrooms. And there's really not an area where all people that are staying there could even congregate. There's certainly no room for privacy for some of the activities like job search and computer use, for even just some downtime, some time to be with your family, some time to pray, or you know, just to meditate. But even basic needs. So when they go to prepare meals, there's the one kitchen, and there's 10 adults. There's also laundry right off of the kitchen. And so as people are trying to make their way, you're just constantly bumping into one another. If they don't decide to cook together, you've got chaos. But really, they need more space and more breathing room than we give them. So the other thing that was happening is we were increasingly turning people away. So as of 2013, our turnaway rate had reached an all-time high. It was 56 households. You know, and what that means is those that were most in danger, we found a way to accommodate. But those who, you know, they were experiencing domestic violence, but not indicating there was danger at that moment in time, but certainly could happen, we, you know, we just couldn't find a space for them. We couldn't find a space for them in other areas, in our area. And we, you know, realized, like we had number of years ago, since 2007, it was time to do something about creating a new shelter. So our new shelter is going to have many new features that we're proud to be able to bring to the community.
You know, for me, when I took the shelter tour the first time, it really brought a lot of mixed emotions for me. So on one hand, I'm so thankful that our area has a safe haven for people to go to. It has a place where they can escape immediate danger. But at the other time, and you put yourself in that position, you think, you know, how would I fit into the shelter with my children, with all of these other families? Mm-hmm. It really brings up both ends of the story there. When I was able to tour the new shelter, it was so wonderful. It's large. It has privacy. It has an area where families not only can be with other families, but they can also be alone as a unit. And I think at this time, that's really important. when I did my shelter tour of the original shelter, we were in sort of the intake room, and you could hear children playing in the playroom next door. You could hear things going on in the kitchen. So you know, you get the sense that as at the probably one of the most sensitive and devastating times of your life, when maybe you're being talked to by an investigator or you're trying to get some of your affairs in order, you really get the sense that you don't truly have privacy. So on the flip side, you're safe, but you know it probably isn't the best place for healing and for the families to get their lives back on track. So the new shelter really is just going to provide everything that we're providing now and so much more when it comes to privacy, when it comes to space, when it comes to just being able to have a moment to breathe, which I think a lot of times these families, that's what they need. They just need a moment of peace.
Yeah, no, when Kathy was mentioning it, we were just talking about the cramped quarters, and you just think, especially in those early days, well, like you say, Jen, you're trying to get everything in order, and all of a sudden you're just surrounded by people, and you kind of need time just to sort things out.
You do. You know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you're a lot of times you're coming in the middle of the night, you're coming in with the clothes on your back, you know, you've had a moment to escape from a situation, and you're thankful to be safe, you're thankful to be somewhere where you know that your children are going to be safe. But there's a lot of emotions going on that I don't think any of us can even understand. You know, the amount of processing that needs to go on in your mind just to wrap yourself around, you know, where you've been and where you are now. And, you know, a 2 month stay, you think 2 months. Well, that's 2 months that you have to figure out what are you doing with the rest of your life? Where are you going now? That's not a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I think being able to have expanded facilities where there's increased areas for counseling, to work with people on job counseling and looking towards getting themselves, you know, self-sufficient and sustainable is really important.
Boy, and you're right. 2 months seems, when you're trying to put a lot of this together and tie up some loose ends and put things together, that every day counts.
Exactly. So, you know, I just think just looking, you know, just walking through the new shelter, it's not even the shelter yet. It's a shell of what it will be. But you can visualize that families are going to have space, that they're going to be able to have some common area and some common time, which I think is also important because, you know, one of the things, and we've talked about this before, that survivors feel is that isolation from the rest of the world. So there is something therapeutic about being with other people that are experiencing similar things and being able to, you know, have some common areas. But really what's important is, you know, I would think that maybe what a mother needs is just a quiet, safe place to hug her children and to start processing where her life is going to go.
I mean, we have people come in with no clothing. We have people come in who haven't bathed for some time, just depending on what circumstances they were living in and who they were living with. If you have 10 adults and 10 children and you have 2.5 bathrooms, think of the scheduling nightmare that is, or anybody who has an emergency need to get into the bathroom. It's really difficult. In the new shelter, there will be 15 bedrooms. I believe at this point we have 9 suites. Hmm. And so there are plenty of bathrooms. If there's a large family, kids and mom, you know, they can spread out more than right now if there's a large family and they are either going to go in their one bedroom with two sets of bunk beds, maybe a crib is in the mix, or they may go in the one adjoining bedroom set. So that's 2 bedrooms with 8 beds, 4 bunk beds, and again, spaces where we can put a crib. And when I say a space to put a crib, you know, it's like between the bed and the closet. I mean, there's really... you know, between those bunk beds, you know, an adult person can walk between them, but there's really not a lot of, there's just not space. And when you have bunk beds, if you sit on the bed, you know, you feel like you are boxed in. And so where do you go to have a conversation with a child? Where do you go to have a moment of privacy for yourself? Where do you go if you want to talk to a staff person aside from the one office where there are multiple desk spaces for that office? And we're also answering the 24-hour hotline. You know, there's a lot to be said. The other thing that's going to happen with the new facility is it's going to be accessible. We've had a mom with a teenager in a wheelchair before. Mom would pick up her daughter. Not ideal circumstances whatsoever. The shelter we're in now does not have wheelchair accessibility, but our new shelter will. Our new shelter will be on the bus line. It'll have access to walk in order to get necessities and food. So even the change of location matters in terms of the bus line and things like that.
Well, let's talk about what you need to make this all a reality. You said you're now under $300,000 is needed.
Yeah, so we're raising $1 million to renovate the new facility. We're going to relocate and furnish our 10,000 square foot shelter. And that came with a $1 million price tag. That's going to allow us to make all those things happen, plus have a first year's worth of operating expenses so that we're, you know, financially sound. We are at $715,000 of that raised. We're only there because folks have looked at the need, have examined what it is we're doing. They've looked at what we're proposing. They've done the numbers. Many people have run the numbers, and they've said, yeah, that's something I want to invest in because this is really making a difference for the next 40 years in our community. And especially if they've seen the former shelter or the current one that we're using, they get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've talked before, this is a community problem. And so yeah. We really depend on the community to look at the need. You know, we're a unique organization. We serve a unique cause. There are a lot of great nonprofits out there that serve the needs of people across our community. But we are the only one that are serving victims and survivors of domestic violence. And what we do is life-saving, and it is emergent, and it is necessary, because if we cannot take somebody out of a situation that could be potentially life-threatening or you know, physically detrimental to them, we're really not doing a service to our community. We really need to get the victim out of there. We need to get the children out of there. The effects of this are so impactful on our community, and I don't know that we've ever really sat down and thought about that. But, you know, children that go to schools that are in domestic violence situations are going to struggle, and they're going to cause problems within the classroom through no fault of their own. They're either going to be very far behind because they're not able to get the support that they need. They don't have a place to study. They're experiencing violence at night when they go home. There could be behavior problems. There could be, you know, a lot of issues. So as a community, we really need to stop thinking about this as what is happening in someone else's home as being their problem. We need to think about it as a community problem. We all need to pull together and help these families get to where they need to be, which is safe.
And I guess the fact that you're able to double how many people you're going to take, that's great, but that still probably is not going to meet the need that's out there that still, there are people that unfortunately are still not going to be able to get in.
Ted, if everyone who's experiencing this came forward, then absolutely the need could not be met. What we find is not everybody is seeking shelter. So, you know, there are folks who go to court and get some of their needs taken care of that way. There are support groups because not everybody is ready to walk out of a relationship. I mean, just a moment ago we talked about we need to get them out. Well, you know, yes, we need to get them out if they want to get out, or if they express that is for their safety, that's what they need to do. But not everybody is at that place. And we certainly don't expect people to do things that are not where they're at. You know, if people evaluate the situation for years, people's situations are different. But again, if everybody wanted to come into shelter, you're absolutely right. But what we have done is look at what the need has been, what our population is, what our population growth is. We have other housing options that we've been able to use over the past 5 years. And all of those things put together, we estimate that we will be good for the next 40 years in terms of population growth, in terms of having additional housing options. You know, we have a couple transition houses with 4 units, and we also put people into their own housing. So for the folks who are looking for the sheltering route, who might make a permanent break, they're making that permanent break because they see no other way out. Most of the people don't really want to end the relationship. They want the abuse to stop. They don't have that within their control. And so when it gets dangerous enough, or they know something bad is going to happen, they can't be taken back, they're seeking this type of service, and that's what we're trying to knock out with the new shelter.
That's exciting that that this will meet needs like that, and along with the transition houses that you have, and that's encouraging that you've been able to make those kind of strides to meet so many needs.
You know, when we identified this in 2007, that the need was there, we didn't at that time even realize what the population growth impact would be, or that we would be turning away so many families by 2013. So, you know, we've been taking steps in terms of increasing what we offer in the community. Starting in 2010, we provide, you know, housing. So we help people get into their own units directly from shelter and in other circumstances. But we've also opened two houses in the city. Both of those two houses donated, and one of them we had to raise money that the community assisted in renovating. And the other one, in a business in town, MacDoc, rehab the other building to make it ready for use. So, I mean, among those options, you know, we have a bed inventory that allows sort of some flexibility to serve this need being folks in danger. Not everybody comes to us because they're in danger. They come to us because also they just can't take it anymore, because there's a lot of mind games, a lot of crazy-making behavior. But the bottom line is, with all that crazy-making behavior, it's backed up by threats, and violence has been used. So we're pleased to be able to meet the need with the community's help.
Kathy Anderson here, Jen Glatrell here. More coming up about Empower House on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook. Just search News Talk 1230 WFVA. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Jen Goetro and Kathy Anderson from Empower House here this morning. We're talking about really focusing in this morning on the new domestic shelter that will open soon. Under $300,000 needed to be raised. And what are you looking, the money now that is being raised, Kathy? What are some of the things that is needed, and will that go for?
So right now we're picking out furniture. You know, we have some bunk beds at our current shelter that are in constant need of repair. They're just not doing the trick. So in the new shelter, not only is it larger, but we're going to go for industrial beds that meet the need, that are resistant to pests. And so we're very specifically focused on raising the funds to make that happen. We're also, you know, we always need supplies like paper towels and laundry detergent, because we're still operating our current shelter. There's been a lot of questions about, do we need used furnishings and such. We were very thankful to the Vacos family for donating some furnishings in a hotel refresh that they did. So we were able to get some really nice sofas, sleeper sofas, and some furnishings like chairs and such. What we need now is not used furnishings. So we're asking that if people have used furnishings, we will work with our collective group of folks who help furnish the houses that our families move into. But for the shelter, we're going to be picking out and ordering certain industrial furnishings that the mm-hmm. shelter needs. In addition to that, we're just making sure that we've got all the operating costs we need. We actually are paying, you know, light, water, et cetera, on the existing building, and you know, insurance, things like that. So again, we're raising the money, and we're also collecting, you know, supplies for what the residents are using right now and will be using in our new facility.
Jen, as somebody who's on the board, this is an exciting time. I mean, and you've seen things really ramp up and become just really vibrant as far as what's going on.
Well, I can say in my service to the board, I've really seen one speed, which is full speed ahead. And it's so amazing to be part of this organization to watch that. You know, we've had so many exciting projects come up and actually come to fruition in the past couple of years, between the transition homes, between moving our outreach office and the new shelter. And really, the shelter is something to truly be excited about, because we can see that the need is going to be met. We're going to see the actual benefits of everything that we're doing very quickly. I'm amazed at our community. I'm overwhelmed by the generosity that of certain individuals and families, and then just of people in general. You know, we have some large donors, and we have some people who think, I think this is a great cause, and they gave $25 at the community give, which is helping us reach our goal step by step. So to be inspired by this community, to watch people understand what we're trying to accomplish here, and then to open their pocketbooks, to open their hearts to this cause is just wonderful. You know, I'm really, really inspired by our community.
And to make the rest of the way, the $300,000 that's needed, it's big and small gifts will get you there.
Absolutely. We have several requests into additional localities who haven't pledged to assist us. People have pledged over a 3-year period, so they're able to make that larger gift happen. But not all at one time, so incrementally. And we have received gifts as small as $10 for the new shelter. So, you know, they all add up. You know, it's those large gifts that in the beginning, you know, sort of whittled down and got us to the point where we started demolition. We just started demolition within the last month. And so, you know, we're uncovering any surprises we have. It's not building from the ground up. So whatever surprises there are that's being uncovered during demolition, we're working with the county to make sure that, you know, everything that we're putting in and changing is to code. And, you know, it's time. It's very exciting. But we're not there yet. And our community has been generous, and we're so grateful for people signing on and wanting to make this happen.
If someone wants to give, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So they can give online, or they can call 373-9372, or our email address is office@empowerhouseva.org. Lots of ways to contact. But on our website, that information is there. They can stop by, they can call, they can email, and ask for me, ask for Kathy Anderson to talk about gifts to the shelter. And, you know, but they can give online, they can give anonymously, you know, any way they'd like to do it.
Real quick, if someone, I always forget about this and mention it, the hotline number, if someone does have a need, what's the hotline number?
Yeah, the hotline number is 540-373-9373. I never mentioned that we had 100 men donate $1,000 to help, you know, launch the end of the campaign. It wasn't quite the end of the campaign, but it really made a difference right there at sort of the mid-end. We had 70,000 come in new donors that almost got us to 100 men.
Wow. EmpowerhouseVA.org. EmpowerhouseVA.org for more information. Kathy Anderson, Jen Galatro, we need to continue this conversation. We'll do that soon. Thanks for coming.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.